entire
No, 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 we should have, because then we could have tracked down what it was that we did by looking carefully at timings.
Press buttons. That's all I know.
Right.
That's your game. Okay.
So okay, so
I can start.
I'll introduce you for the video.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so today we have a nice talk from Millicent Lee, who is Byron's PhD student here. And looking forward to seeing what she says about privileged information.
Okay. All right, thank you. Yeah, so this is a project I've been working on with Alberto's also on Zoom. And so it's Alberto Arnab, sometimes I use some of his stuff, Naomi Safro, and obviously Byron. So my talk is on model activations may not convey privileged information. Okay. Let me see if this works. Okay, so I think a few months ago they released this whole tracing a model's thoughts, which I mean obviously was really cool when it came out. So Anthropic released this, which they were basically looking at how Claude does certain things, like plan a few steps ahead, has this notion of multilingualism in the model parameters, and how Claude might do something like mental math. And so I think this, I mean, it's pretty interesting as a whole, but this, the nice thing about being able to have this ability to look at how Claude does some of these things is we can kind of use this information to track down whether Claude hallucinates or gives unfaithful explanations. And so I think all of these questions kind of center around whether, like how, or whether we can actually understand how some of these models are thinking. Right. So one approach that people have looked at is there's the one OpenAI paper from back in 2023, where they looked at whether you can use language models to explain neurons in language models. So I guess they were just basically inspecting the different features in language models just by using explanations. And I think more recently, some of the work that I've been looking at is on this whole concept of introspection. So there is this paper that came out this year, which is called Looking Inward, Language Models Can Learn About Themselves by Introspection. The whole idea is they want to measure this ability for models to introspect, which is it's a concept that people have talked about in human psychology, which is do humans know their own mental processes? And likewise, do models also know their own mental processes? And so, for example, how they approached it in this paper, they fine tune. They have two models, and they fine tune one model on the outputs of the first of the other model, and they want to basically measure and see whether the original model knows more about its own outputs than the second model does. But it's a little confusing, but there's a two model interplay here, and so. So there are I guess two kinds of explanations that you can procure from this. You can have models explain text directly, which is what some of these papers have done, which is explanations in natural language, or you can go the route of object lens, future lens, tune lens and stuff, where you give more distributions as your explanations, distributions of tokens. So the interesting, I guess, counterpoint for this whole introspection idea is there was a paper that also came out as a counterpoint to the paper that I just showed with introspection, which is language models fail to introspect about their knowledge of language. So in this paper, they basically talk about how they use linguistically grounded approaches on base models and a similar setup to figure out whether one model might know more about its outputs than the other model. At least in their paper, they find out that this is not the case, that models cannot do introspection. I guess the interesting thing about these papers and how it relates to what I've been working on is these papers look at introspection with respect to examining model outputs and not using any kind of model internals. And there obviously is a lot of information that you can kind of glean from activations. And of course, the OpenAI paper I showed earlier had some of these explanations for neuron. But I guess I'm interested in looking at whether you can also get explanations from activations. And also like to see whether these models have the ability to kind of introspect in the same way, but from
Are you going to
activations.
talk in more detail of what Sion's finding here was in this paper? 'Cause I'm not actually familiar with this paper yet.
I don't want to like say it wrong because I read this
Okay.
a while back, but they found that there were like they did a bunch of studies over linguistics data sets and like BLIMP, I think was like one data set they use, or it was one of those other grounded data sets, and found that models were not able to ha do the same kind of introspection that the prior papers had found. But I don't know if I want to explain it because I feel I don't want to like say the wrong things. But I think the main point is there's kind of like a lot of like interplay between like whether models can actually introspect or whether they can't, right? I did like the paper though. When I read it, I thought it was like I think the dialogue is pretty cool, with some of these works. Okay, so the motivation for examining this kind of like ability, I think we won't call it introspection because this is more about whether models have the ability to know about privileged information, and I'll explain what that means. Basically, we don't know how language models know how to do certain things, so it would be actually really useful to have a tool that can do such a thing. And this is actually already something that people have worked on, which is I'll explain the related work after. But people have already worked on basically like decoding activations into natural language. But the issue that comes up with the this series of works, as it does for like the introspection series of work, is that a lot of these papers like question the utility. Sorry, they don't question the utility. So I'm questioning the utility of some of these methods, but these papers are saying, oh, decoding activation into natural language just works, right? Introspection, again, they only use inputs and outputs. They don't use any model internals, so they measure like this kind of privileged knowledge or introspection a little bit differently. And so like in our case, we have access to model internals. And so our hope is to basically understand the degree of privileged access to knowledge that we have from model internals. So I guess the figure on the right, which is not super clear, I think I want to remake this. This is from my paper, but basically there are kind of two ways to think about like how models can decode activations into natural language. In one case, basically on the left, we have an instance where the model actually does not have the ability to gather like privileged information or information that can only be seen from activations. Whereas like on the right, we have the model kind of respond with a prompt that says that it does have access. So it knows that, I mean, I think the example might be a little bit contrived, but it knows that the currency of the US is the dollar, which supposedly can only be seen from the activations. All right, so some of the prior work for this is there's a few. Patchkopf's is like the first citation, which and there was also like a concurrent work called like Selfie, where the whole idea is they basically take a model activation from one model, so we call it the target model, and then we patch that activation into an inference pass of the second model. And so the whole idea is, oh yeah, can we basically generate an explanation about the activations just by passing this information from one model to another? And like in these instances, generally the model can be the same or they can be different. But I think a lot of the experiments they ran in their paper were on like the same model family, basically, or like the same exact model. So both models would have like the same world knowledge. There was a second paper that was similar to like conceptually similar to Patchkopf's and Selfie, which it's called the NQA, which shows that models can be trained on some of these activations, and you can ask questions about these activations and get an answer, right? And so again, this one's a little bit different because they focus more on like fine-tuning to get exact answers. But I think the whole like conceptually what they're trying to do is extract some information from activations that you kind of can't get from the input. So I guess there's a few issues that come up with some of these methods. So first off, there's no guarantees on the type of information that might be verbalized. I guess we coined the term like verbalization, but they didn't like use any of these terms. But they were also like again not specific with the information that you would get, because like for instance, in their paper, did a variety of like case studies on various tasks, right? But obviously the utility depends on the particular task and what you're trying to look for. But I think we like posit in like our paper that you really should know what kind of information you want, because otherwise, what are you asking for, right? Another issue that also comes up with a lot of these papers is the fact that you have two models and they both have like some amount of world knowledge that can either be the same or different. Most likely they're the same, right? And so we also run some experiments about how models like deal with this world knowledge or what happens when they differ. But essentially the problem that comes up is some of these experiments from prior works, I don't think they have very good controls on where the knowledge comes from when you verbalize activations, because the verbalizer you're using is a large language model that obviously is very powerful. So you don't know if you're actually getting the information from the activation or you're actually getting it from the second model. Okay. See. Okay, so some goals from this work. Basically, can we determine what type of information extracted from activations and is it privileged? Right? And again, privileged is the term we use privilege as a way to denote information that you cannot get from input text. Basically, well, I showed like a one of our first experiments, which kind of talks about like how you can differentiate them. But our goal to when we use some of these tools is obviously not get information that we can already get like different prompting. We also want to basically identify to what extent certain tasks work best with verbalization and which do not. This is not something that again has been done like prior work where they're like just like, oh, here's a slew of tasks that kind of makes sense to apply this tool to. There's not much of a distinction about like, oh, what information do we care about looking at, or what's the goal of this task, or what do you want basically, right? It's very like vague. And then the third one is that I've been thinking about for some time is basically how much world knowledge is needed in your verbalizer, right? So obviously, like I guess the lesser analogy to a verbalizer would be to use like a pretty basic like logistic probe or something like that. And so I guess we do. I don't really have like the full results on this, but we do make comparisons of verbalization to probe, which they have done in patch scopes. But we kind of show like under certain scenarios, if the verbalizer does not have the world knowledge, it actually cannot do the task it was like assigned to do. Okay, so first section, I'm going to talk about what type of information extracted from activations. So like quick preliminaries, because I did kind of breeze past. There's a bunch of models and it's a little slightly annoying, but I just give like a high level on this. Basically, for any of these verbalization approaches, you have two models. You have model one, which is we call the target model. And then we have model two, which is our verbalizer model. And the idea is from model one, we basically extract an activation and yeah, we use Insight, which is very helpful. The tool is very nice. We extract an activation from a certain layer, either the IVE token or all tokens, because one distinction that I guess I forgot to make is patch scopes takes an activation from one token, whereas you can take activation from an entire layer. It's not as clear as to why that would make as much sense, but some works have done that. So we just say we do the same, right? So from there, we basically take the activation and then we insert it into the inference pass of a different layer of the second model to get the output. I think generally patch scopes does this thing, which I like kind of disagree with, but they do a thing where they take the activation and patch to every single layer, which I just don't really understand like why that is supported or like what evidence they have as to why they would do that. But they do that anyway, so that's how they do the evaluation. So we just do the same. So I guess in the image, a nice explanation of this is nice visuals. If you take model one, this is for if we take a single token and we patch it to model two, we take the president of the United States, we take the last token, and we patch it to the end where we have a verbalization prompt. And our verbalization prompt is the subject of X. Right, we patch it in there and then we get some output. Right. If you have multiple tokens, the way that you would do this is you would take the activations from the president of the United States, and then you would patch it into the beginning I think some of these are design decisions of like the prior works. I think you can probably like give or take like manipulate some of these design decisions, but again, the whole idea is like you just want to insert it into the inference pass of the second model. Okay, so for the data set, we use feature extraction data set, which is, I think there's like 12 or 20 or something, but based on prior work, we just use six of them, just to be consistent. So what this kind of looks like, so the input of feature extraction is usually there's like two prompts of it. The United States in 1928. So that's like okay, it's subject. Okay, so it's like it gives you have like a prompt that has like the subject, and then you have the relation, which is the currency of X, and then you want the object. And so that's the output, which is the currency of the United States is the dollar, right? And so the way that these verbalization methods have used feature extraction is they take the first input, which is the United States in 1928. They change that into an activation. They take the last token, and then they insert it into model two plus an interpretation prompt, which is the currency of X, and then they ask for an output, right? And so they get the currency of the United States is the dollar, right? Okay, yeah, it's just like setup stuff. Basically, I use Llama 3.1 AB. I'm pretty consistent about that. I did also do some cross-model experiments, but they're not really in the paper. I probably will add it to appendix. But ideally, like again, I mentioned model one and model two can be the same or different model, but when I was like running some of these experiments for cross-model, it didn't always work, which I think that was probably like some interesting tidbit, especially for it patching multiple activations and fine-tuning over it. That didn't always work across models. I think PatchScopes was a little bit more consistent, but oh, sorry. But I didn't see too much of a difference in like the behavior when you did a cross model or like have any more powerful like outputs. So okay, across all experiments, I basically use two approaches. One of them is the PatchScopes approach, or like Sophie also does the same thing. Take one token and patch it into the inference pass of the second model. And then for the other approach, which uses all tokens, it's called latent interpretation tuning. And basically, you're just fine-tuning a model on all of the activations plus QA pairs. So questions about that activation. So they don't, there's not like an analogous example where you use all activations and inspect it without fine-tuning. I didn't actually try that, but and the reason being is there's no technically no prior work for that. I probably could, but I mean the setup would be pretty like simple, but I don't actually see that working too well because you have to learn the representation from all activations. Okay. So okay, a really simple experiment is to kind of ask like, okay, what knowledge is actually available in the activations? And I guess maybe this is not what feature extraction data set was supposed to be used for, but basically we can just do prompting, like zero shot prompting without any internal activations on the feature extraction data set. And so the reason being is you want to basically understand like, oh, so if I'm able to get a certain performance via like zero shot prompting, what am I actually extracting when I do verbalize the activations, right? So the setup for this is we have like again the inputs that I showed from previous, which is the United States in 1928 and then the currency of X, right? What I want to do is I want to concatenate both as a zero shot prompt instead of just turning the United States in 1928 into an activation. Obviously, I do that for the verbalizer, but all I'm basically doing is constructing a zero shot prompt for our model to do inference. The model I do inference on is not the same as the verbalizer. Just keep that in mind. And yeah, so verbalization, the format is activation, which is the United States in 1928, plus the currency of X. And the verbalizer models I previously trained, so they are trained on the same setups that they previously proposed in their paper. And then so their eval, and I actually thought this eval was slightly questionable across like all like the other papers, which is if you generate 20 tokens, you see if the target is there, and if so, it's correct. I have a problem with this eval because under certain circumstances where you do zero shot prompting and the model isn't very succinct, you will lose out on whether the model actually knows the information or not, just because you're doing a pretty like cut and dry like accuracy based eval. Honestly, probably something like precision or something might be better, but they didn't really. I think patch scopes change like the evaluation depending on what task it was looking at. So I the reason I bring this up as a problem because when I was like playing around with some of this, I had problems kind of coercing a instruction tune model to actually give me the output that I wanted in 20 tokens. Right. So I think the 20 tokens is kind of arbitrarily chosen, but it's consistent with prior
Why
work.
don't you just try something like QShot so that it knows that it needs to give the answer as the first one?
Oh, I probably could. I guess I didn't end up doing that because I want to be consistent in doing it zero shot like the other, like the verbalization work is.
Which other works had this setup?
So it was latent QA and then patch scopes,
Oh,
and
they
then
both did this,
they
yeah.
both did the same thing. Yeah. I probably could do that, but I think it was better to probably create a like harder baseline for us. Then it makes it more convincing because I'll show you results. Basically, when you do zero shot prompting, you essentially get the same scores. Right. So it's like, so yeah, if we did few shot, we'd probably get even better, which would be pretty nice. But yeah, so we did six categories. I guess I can explain the specifics, but
Can you go back one slide,
yes.
please? I don't think I got the setup actually.
Okay.
Okay, the input is the United States in 1928
Yes.
plus the currency of X. Contact pool. Okay. What is X being replaced with? United States?
So what we're basically doing here is so the currency of X is the same prompt from the feature extraction data. So I literally just keep the same.
It's literally X.
Yeah. And the model just
Okay.
actually completes it. It completes it properly.
But that's weird,
Why?
right? The prompt itself is weird. Like if you're talking about United States, have you ever seen a sentence that is kind of like that the United States in 1928 plus the currency of X? So I have never seen a sentence like that.
I mean,
Like so you don't create a sent you don't substitute X, you don't say the currency of the United States in 1928. Like you don't do that.
no, I don't do any of this because the whole goal is to see whether you can extract the same information. I don't know if the prompt really matters in this case. I see what you mean, though. It is a weird sentence, but the model is able to actually complete it.
Okay, so the
Yeah.
model is kind of like reasoning that okay, by X you mean United States, not
Yes.
1928
It
or
actually gets it
something.
right.
Because
It's
okay.
like the only other thing in the context.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess I don't like I know like you're on the feature extraction paper, but I guess I assumed the feature extraction paper was intended to like be used for analysis of model internals, and so I guess it is a little surprising that it actually works as a zero shot prompt.
Okay.
Yeah, but presumably like yeah, l at least like as few changes to the zero shot prompt as possible. I think I might have like added like a little like answer this prompt or something to get it to work a bit better, but beyond that, like there was the semantic meaning was still the same. Like I didn't change anything about
Okay,
this.
cool. And
Yeah.
also, like, how is that experiment supposed to like connect with the question you are asking?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, question. Yeah. So what type of information? So this is just one part.
Extracted from activations.
Yeah. From
But
so.
here, in this setup, you are not even using the activations.
I am in for the verbalizer. I am. I have a. So the reason this is like a multi-part. So I have a second part of this, but basically what I'm asking here for the first experiment is what kind of knowledge do I actually get from the model if I were to just use it as a from the model if I were to just take the feature extraction data set and use it as a zero shot prompt. I compare it to patch scopes and latent interpretation tuning, which supposedly extracts information from the activations, right? But I get the same score. And so I guess maybe the question could have been worded a little bit differently, but I'm basically asking, do I get the same
When you
information?
say the same score, you're looking at the average.
I'm looking at the average in
Got
some
it.
sense. I mean, give or take, like, I mean, there's obviously be some noise, but
Okay.
I am looking at the average in general. And I find that the performance is essentially the same. So what differences could there possibly be in the information that they actually look at, right?
Sorry. Can you scroll
Yeah.
down a little bit? So that's from that setup, you are grabbing the activations and you are passing them with latent QA path scope and trying to
Yes.
okay,
Sorry,
cool.
yeah. But I can slow down if people want to, but like sorry, I have to say I have a hard cutoff at 11 because I have to go. But the whole idea is I want to compare essentially zero shot prompting to a verbalization setup where you supposedly have more information, or that's what these methods tell you that they do. They're supposed to give you information that zero shot prompting would not give you. So it is surprising that you get the same score. Right. Does that make sense? Okay. I mean, if I showed a second experiment, it might make a bit more sense. So the follow-up to this, the reason why zero-shot prompting is actually useful in this case is because it tells you a lot of this information can essentially be answered solely from the input text, right? So then the follow-up question is, how much of this activation is actually invertible into the input text that we give the model, right? The target model that converts the target the input text to the activation, right? So if, like, let's say you invert the activation back to the input text, then all the information you're really accessing is just the input text itself, right? So in this experiment, what we're basically doing is we take our activation. We obviously also pass into the verbalizer as comparison, but we have this new setup where we take the activation, we invert the activation back into the input text, and then we also do zero-shot prompting. Because the whole idea is if you can basically get the same output from doing this, I guess, this set of steps, what you're really just doing is when you're looking at the activation, you're just reading input text, right? So the main setup for this is we train an inverter model, and it's like Jack's work on inverting embeddings. Although embeddings are slightly different in this case, because embeddings are like mean pooled encoder outputs, and what we're looking at is we're essentially looking at two setups. One where you get all activations, which is much easier to invert since you basically have the information from all tokens, or you're inverting a single vector, which would be the last token of this sentence, right? And so yeah, the process is basically now you extract the activations, you invert the activations, and then you predict the zero shot on the new text. And then we compare this approach to verbalization. Yeah, so I guess this image, hopefully it's not too like a pixelated, but yeah, you basically take this input, you take the activation, and then you have this inverter model, which basically inverts it back into the input text or as close as possible. We don't guarantee that the inverter will actually work completely because the whole point is how much of this information can you actually get from the activation, right? For the second part, you basically take whatever you had from part A, you add the prompt to it, and you do zero-shot prompting. Okay, so that's like the inverter. Does that make sense? Okay. So there were two results. Like I had to do inverting activations over multiple, but inverting multiple activations and then inverting single activations. The reason I find like the whole like inverting multiple activations kind of funny is because I feel like it's such a simplistic task because you already know all the information from all tokens, so it has to work essentially, which it does basically. In our results, last row is like inverting Llama 3. We have this will be a little annoying to read, but basically let me explain. For the decoder, if it doesn't say zero shot, we trained the decoder on the latent QA data set, which is from interpretation tuning. Essentially, we do this so that we kind of match like the training setup that they do in theirs, because they learn a verbalizer on latent QA, which is like activation plus QA pairs, but we essentially mimic the same thing, but for fine tuning, instead of learning over activations, right? But we also include a zero shot setup, and I'll note this in a moment why the scores are a bit higher. We compare against lit on this side, latent interpretation tuning, and this is averaged over all 16 layers that they consider in their paper. So they consider layers 1 to 16, and for each layer, when I mean 1 to 16, is they take an activation from that layer, and then what is it? They pass it into the inference pass of the zeroth layer. So they do the source layer 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, on and on, and they all like patch into the first layer, and then they take an average of all of that. But like for fair comparison, we also like choose one layer and show you the one that we decide to invert. We don't invert every single layer. I mean, every single layer or token in the single case, because creating the models just take way too long. So yeah, we had to like save time and compute. We don't have that much compute. But okay, so we find that essentially, if you, I don't have averages here, save space. But for the most part, doing the inversion approach, you get a better performance than if you were to compare it to the verbalization approaches. And I think this is, in my mind, kind of obvious because, again, you are presented with all activations over all tokens. That means the input information has to be present in there. So for the zero shot does better than trained. And this could be, in some case, how we trained our model for prediction. But another problem that I mentioned earlier was the 20 token limit. Sometimes you would have like, this is where you were just like, oh, doesn't it just fail? And surprisingly, the zero shot models answer feature extraction really well. But when you train a model on questioning, considering the model then like, I would say it's like the refusal where it's just like, oh, sorry, I can't answer that. Do you mean this? Right. Then you run into that problem. And that's where probably few shot would work better, right, to answer feature extraction questions. But yeah, I think that accounts for like a good amount of like why I think there's like a pretty large like performance difference between like zero shot and the trained version is just because the tw 20 token limit is like pretty prohibitive. And just because a model doesn't get the answer right in 20 tokens doesn't mean it's the information isn't there. You can say that analogously for like the verbalization methods too. But in their case, like they are trained to verbalize activations, they're very succinct, right? And for patch scopes, in theory, if you count like how they do their setup, you have 16 times 32 chances to get the right answer, which is very, very lax. So I think it's actually like a fair, at least for us, like it's kind of a fair comparison. We kind of give them more grace because that's just how their method works. So okay, single activation is a little bit more difficult, and we actually used the we were using similar methods to JAX code. And we do find like so they in JAX code, like so this is their paper, text embeddings reveal more than text or something. I think that's the title. They find that like inverting over decoders kind of sucks. And I did my own implementation of this, like hand coded it. I did find that it significantly lagged behind if you were to just use T5 base to invert. But if you looked at the average score, I don't have an average on here, but I think it was like 0.3 for our inversion with T5 base versus the average of patch scopes was a 0.38. So it's like basically getting to the point where it's, I mean, it's not matching. But I think a one way to think about this, from my understanding, is basically our method of just inverting the activation can tell you how much of the information in the activations is from the input text, which is very useful as a heuristic because these methods do not guarantee that you will get information from one place or another. And one of the easiest ways is to be like, oh, this much is from the input text, right? Yeah, let me see if there's anything else interesting. But yeah, I mean, there are some tasks where our inversion does much better than patch scopes, and obviously some tasks where patch scopes does better than us. I think it's pretty consistently across the board. Like this also depends on like the tasks you choose. But we actually show like some results on other tasks like after. So okay. Oh, okay, let me just show some examples. So like reason why inverting activations is hard. I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but we are inverting single token activations that are not mean pooled, like what you would with encoder-only models. And so you do lose a lot of information, but the information is still basically there for the inversion, which is nice. The only problem is basically when you do this is an example of an inversion that I like took from my code. Basically, this person, John McDermott, is in soccer or football, but does not play for that specific team. So as you can see, like the conversion for like proper nouns of people and usually like teams is not as accurate. But another like counterpoint for this is for the example, the United States example I showed earlier, it lagged. Basically, it matches the United States perfectly, but gets the date wrong. So I guess I hypothesize in this case, it's mainly due to how much information the model has about a certain entity, right? And so like obviously like John McDermott, I was like Rudgullet, I don't know how to say his name, is probably not very common in the model. Whereas like the model obviously sees the United States a lot. So it has a more accurate like handling of the proper noun United States. The model also, when you do some of these inversions, you also like, so look, appointment establishment at the appointment of, so basically the structure is all correct, but you see the proper noun wrong. The reason why this matters is because for feature extraction, like you have to get the name, like the proper noun correct, so the object. I mean, you need to get the subject correct to predict the object correctly, right? And so that's like one limitation. But beyond this, like the doing single activation inversion actually works quite well, even though it doesn't see as much information as when you, as if you were to invert, what is it, like a embedding, right?
Which activation is that? It's
This
a
is, I take the last token.
last token and
Yes.
which layer? The very last layer.
So I do 15th layer. I do it for consistency across this diversity.
Like middle, somewhere in
Middle.
the middle.
Middle is llama, so like there's 32 layers.
Okay.
I did do some like testing with earlier layers, and like the, if you did like layer one or something, it like you would think that the model would have more information about tech.
No.
Yeah.
Not that.
Why I did that, and I also did the end, and I found like the training was not stable at all, and it was garbage. Middle is just better.
Yeah, I think
Cool.
somewhere in the middle makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, so this part, the one question that we have 15. One question that comes up is what, to extent what certain tasks work with verbalization and which do not. Because obviously the question is just like, oh, you just picked feature extraction. I picked it because it was in the previous papers. I think kind of makes sense. But also we want to try like their setups. And I mean, thanks to you guys for talking about this. But this is, we want to basically investigate, oh, so maybe when people talk about doing verbalization, maybe they want to think about what tasks are more ideal to verbalize, right? Because some, like, I mean, maybe I'm a little surprised about feature extraction. That one ends up being something that you can basically just answer from the model text, right, directly. But basically, one goal some people might want to use verbalization for is, I guess I talked about the Holy Grail, which is just using verbalizer to access unknown knowledge. Yeah, we talked about this. This is helpful. And then so we basically experiment with a task where the knowledge is fabricated. Okay. And of course this is Arnav's data set, but we also like change a lot of stuff. But thank you for your data set. So basically we use like a data set of personas with fake biographical information. This is like also from like the physics of alums paper, right? They had like a similar setup where they came up with a bunch of biographies of people. The place names are all legit, but the people are not real. So example, like from the data says, you have this guy named Mohammed Aziz from Pakistan who likes playing chess. He's a lawyer, whatever. You just have all of this information about this person. So we actually ended up doing three different setups, and I'll explain why each setup matters. So the standard setup is what I basically showed, where you just have this person, you have the country where they're from, you have a lot of these attributes about them. And I think one thing to note that I thought ended up being pretty interesting is, given the person's name, you might make assumptions about where they're from, right? And so we found that to be like pretty, it's not like an issue, but it found that to be actually pretty interesting when we were doing analysis on why verbalization works or doesn't work. And that also motivated some of the data sets that we use, like the setups. So first one, again, is the standard setup, which I just showed. Second is this shuffled setup. So let me explain the shuffled setup. We have the person's name, and then we have their attributes. What we're gonna do is we're gonna keep the person's name, but we're gonna mix up all of the attributes, including the country, where they're from, yeah, where they're from, their hobbies, favorite foods, whatever, right? The reason for doing this is when we did one of their experiments early on, we found that when you were to use verbalization, you would actually get really good performance on just zero shot prompting and inversion, so our setup, even though supposedly the model should not know about these people, which I just thought was kind of odd. That means this implies that the second model, like our verbalizer, is making some implicit assumptions about, or like not even just our verbalizer, also the zero shot model is making some implicit assumptions about the relationship between the person and their attributes. So one thing we wanted to test that I thought was similar to like control tasks from like probing, which is if you shuffle it, if the model is able to get high scores on the predictions, then that means the model is actually predicting based on the attributes from the activations as opposed to their implicit biases or assumptions. Okay. The third, sorry, that was like a mouthful. The third data set is we have this fantasy data set where I make up all the names. They do not exist, right? So model one will know about it, model two will not. Categories, country, favorite food, favorite drink, favorite music genre, favorite sport, favorite game. And then pretty self-explanatory. So the setup for this is same, kind of very similar to the feature extraction setup, but this is implicitly like a QA task. We say, okay, my name is some persona's name, and this is how I like created the activation, because what I'm assuming here, which I think should be pretty valid, is if you make a prompt that is the person's name, that prompt should encode the information about that person, right? So like encode that into an activation. And then so the full prompt for verbalization is act and then the country of origin for X, right? So same setup, similar setup as like feature extraction. I wouldn't say it's exact. Zero shot input is going to be my name is persona name, and then the country of origin for X is blank, right? It still works. I'll show you results. It still works with that prompt. And then for the inversion input, I invert the name into something else, and then I have the full prompt. So similar to my prior inversion setups. The reason why so inversion matters here, because the idea is you can use inversion as kind of like a test to see how much of this information comes from the input input text, right? So ideally in a situation where the model has privileged knowledge about the activation, you would assume the inversion gets a score of zero, right? So I think that's like a good test to check, or like basically zero or close to like zero, right? Eval is still the same. I generate 20 tokens. Okay, so the results, this is a bit hard to read, but I can just explain each section. So for this first part, we have results on the vanilla data set, where you have a score of 0.36 on the country, favorite food, favorite drink, music genre, sport, and game. I think when I first ran this, I was a little surprised that Zero Shot was even doing well at all, because I was just like, aren't these personas that weren't supposed to exist or something, right? But I do think that there are some implicit biases with like the way the personas are set up, and so that's why for instance, the country, Zero Shot is really well guessing what country. And like, so the inversion setups basically, like, they're a little bit off, but they get similar scores. So, and then single activation inversion gets better. So as you can tell, like, even with the single activation inversion, the name probably isn't right, but it's probably inverting it into like a name that is similar to what country the model should predict to get it right. Like, so if Mohammed Aziz is like Pakistan, it's probably something similar, right? So in the shovel setup, I thought this was actually pretty interesting. With the shovel setup, essentially, again, labels are us, the attributes are all shuffled, the name stays the same. But when we shuffle this, we train another model one on each of these data sets. Okay. And then when we get the activation from these data sets, we do the same setup where we make the prediction about the attributes. And when we make the prediction, we find that the shuffled data set, basically most of these scores, except maybe passcopes for favorite sport and favorite game, are close to zero, right? Which shows that the model, like whatever you're doing in model two or the verbalizer, is implicitly using its world knowledge to figure out what it's supposed to predict, which is not what you want, right? I guess the interesting part is passcopes actually gets a decent score for favorite sport and favorite game. So maybe it does work as intended, right? If you compare it to inversion, like, you can still maybe make some guesses, but maybe passcope does have a little bit of privileged knowledge that it uses when it makes a prediction. And then the last row, any fantasy names that you've never seen before, which I think this might be a kind of like an obvious, like, duh, you just can't get any knowledge of it. So like, I guess the takeaway from this is you really need some amount of like world knowledge from the verbalizer, which is definitely different from if you were to use a probe, because with the probe, you don't need that, right? And so I think this, I mean, I would say this is probably a limitation, because the goal...
So is your feeling that because it doesn't even recognize that that's a name or something, or you have a fantasy name?
Oh, sorry, can you say that again? What do you mean?
Okay, so like, you know, I'm trying to get intuition. So like, So do you have an example for what, how different is the fantasy setup?
Oh, sure. I wish I had the code for it. Oh, Alberto said something, because He says, worth mentioning that if you train M1 with the shuffled activations. Oh yeah, I will show this. I'll show this after, Alberto. There's another result that we had. So with the names, so basically what would happen is you would have the name of the person, right? And then I would be like, oh, I made up this like food item called spice bowl or something. I would want the model to predict that, but then it would usually predict with something generic like Chipotle or something. Not actually Chipotle, but it would come up with something within its vocabulary, which I mean, not that spice bowl isn't in its vocabulary, but model two obviously does not have this information, but the tokens are still in its vocabulary, which is the difference.
Wait, so you the name of the person would be Spice Ball or
No, sorry,
no.
that's the food. That's the food. Food
Oh.
item. The person name of the person is still, I keep this. Oh, sorry. For the fantasy version, I do generate new names of people, right? But the implicit assumption here with a lot of with these verbalization setups is you, well, I mean, I don't know if
So,
it's
but the
the
main difference
assumption.
between Shuffled and Fantasy.
Shuffle contains names that are exactly the same from this one.
I understand.
Yes.
So, but then, so I'm trying to understand the difference between Shuffled and Fantasy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this one, all I'm doing is shuffling the attributes
I
from
understand.
this. Yes, from this.
And the difference in Fantasy is.
Difference is I create completely new names that are
So it's
like,
just the names.
it's just the names, but the attributes are also shuffled into something that doesn't exist.
So, but like, so it's just like Shuffled, but with new names.
It has different attributes too.
Oh, like what kind of attribute?
I make up attributes for for food. I like I
Do you
mentioned.
say do things like your favorite blabru?
Yeah, whatever.
Wait, so you don't know what a blabru is or whatever, right? So is that so? I'd love to see an example
Oh,
that
I
you
have my
found,
code. I show
or do you have a
after.
data set that you train out like
Yeah,
the
I have to like pull it up though. Let me check.
The thing is that does the model? Do you train the model with the fantasy data? Is the
I
fantasy?
trained the first model with the fantasy data set. I don't with the second, but I have other experiments with it. I mean, now that you guys mentioned it, maybe I should just only change the name. But I think even under the assumption where we change the name, I still don't think it's gonna do well because the issue why I think I bring up why we ended up doing changing also the attributes is again like when you the model basically verbalizer was making a lot of assumptions about the what it would predict. So for instance, for hobby, the model would predict chess and the model would get chess correctly because it's random guessing, right? And so I guess the one way that we thought it would be better to control is just make everything not in the vocab.
Sure.
Yeah, but the issue is it's just very difficult to kind of disentangle this behavior because it's like you either have a completely unknown data set where the model just doesn't know any, like supposedly doesn't know, but it can read from the activations, which is what a lot of these papers purport that they can do, or you come up with a setup where the model might just guess and get it right by random chance, right? Yeah, I'll show you data set. Give me a sec.
So does this kind of imply like shuffled versus fantasy? That patch coats does seem like it can read information that it doesn't know.
Yeah, for shuffled, the model is it might be able to. But yeah, I guess the difference again with shuffled and
Oh
fantasy is
yeah,
like
so like so I see. So the attribute names are, so I see from the chat. Oh, can you open up the
oh
chat
yeah. Is
from
the attribute maps are
open up
different.
the
Oh,
chat
sorry,
here.
I froze it because of the connect. Okay.
Oh, actually, I'll open up the
Oh
chat.
yeah. The objects are
Okay,
different.
here. So let me
Oh, he grabbed it for me.
from Alberto.
Yeah.
Right. So what do you
Can you
say?
see the chat? Oh, you have to open the chat because I can't see it.
What country?
So
Oh, okay.
country look like a so that the attributes are real attributes like country, drink, music,
Yeah, these
board
are real
game.
attributes.
But then the attribute values are things that don't exist in the
Yeah.
real world. Like the country of Lumina,
Yeah.
you just made
I mean,
up.
it probably exists somewhere, but it's not associated with country.
And the food is Breda roast, which sounds delicious, but I don't know what it is.
Me neither.
I see.
So patch scopes now can't even take out the information when the model that's the verbalizer model doesn't know what
Yeah,
Brady Roast is. It
yes.
can't like.
So I guess I don't know. I feel like this is like maybe slightly trivial and like for the fantasy one, we're just like obviously the model will not know it. But I do think it does make kind of like a statement about like the fact that you do need the world knowledge implicitly, but.
So, but then the other question is, so, but then you have when you train your model on this, do you have a baseline where the model can
We're
recall this stuff?
doing a probe for this.
Oh, I see. But
Yeah.
so you don't have a ba you don't have so like my question is like you fine tune the fantasy model.
Yes.
Does it did the model
Oh,
learn this stuff?
yeah, I did. I have results for this in my paper, but I didn't show it on here.
Oh, okay.
Basically, the model does learn the associations in model one.
Oh, the model can say it.
Yes, the model can.
I see, I see.
So it is actually there, but even if you like get the if you use a verbalizer to
And does the
verbalize.
model generalize if you ask it with slightly different wording than what you trained it with? Or the
Yeah.
model, yeah.
Oh, so the training, yeah,
Like,
I
so for
mean we're
example, if you give the model like a multiple choice question, or if you invert the word order, or use a synonym for the instead of saying, you know, what country is somebody from, you say what nation are they from,
these
what
questions.
nationality is, or something like that.
These questions are all out of domain questions. These are not, model is not trained on these questions. Meaning, so when I train like model one, okay, yeah, I guess I didn't make that clear. With the verbalizer, this verbalizer is only trained on the original setup that I showed previously. It is not trained on these personas at all. And so it is trained to basically, it's not trained to answer these prompts either, because feature extraction is also out of domain for this entire setup. So we do it this way, so it's fair. And so these models have not seen this country is X or whatever, or like this person is from this country. So all out of domain. And when model one is trained for these data sets, we use like the questions or like the like biographies that are all like put together.
Also, another thing, if
Yes.
somebody should get the credit for the data set, it should be Theo.
Oh, okay. And I could put both of you guys, that's fine.
Or yeah, I mean, or you can just swap my name with Theo's.
That's fine.
Okay.
Okay. I personally don't really care, but we can do that. Okay. But yeah, I mean, could you help me like train some of the models and stuff? So, but yeah.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, and then so let me just show. So then I will speed this up actually, because maybe like 5 minutes I have to go. But unless you have to just go, would you do it? Okay. I'll do 5 minutes and then I have to. So the other part about this that we were interested in looking at is basically what world knowledge is needed in a verbalizer, because some of these experiments actually kind of implied some fact about some idea about the fact that you need world knowledge to actually verbalize the concepts correctly. Okay, let me see what I said. We train a base model on new knowledge that conflicts with its internal knowledge of a persona and its name. That's basically what we're doing. Is the information verbalized faithful to the new model? Okay, so we have this setup. Let me explain. It might be slightly confusing, but basically,
I get it.
we take the verbalizer, the persona, regular persona setup, and then the shuffle setup. What we're doing is we're basically just swapping labels, right? And we're checking to see how much of the information does the what persona
Nice.
regular persona data set with the shuffled labels does, and then like swap vice versa with the other one. So I guess the interesting thing about this that Alberto actually just said in chat was, if you take the shuffled setup, which shuffled is again trained on the new personas, no, it's the same persona names, new attributes, right? Shuffled attributes, you actually get higher performance with the original labels than if you were to just take the original data set with the regular labels. And I guess it's interesting because there's like some kind of knowledge conflict here, right? Because then now you have the verbalizer, so model two, and then you have model one, and there's conflicting knowledge. So which one does the model, which one does it take? Apparently it takes the verbalizer two knowledge, but the model two knowledge, which is the verbalizer, even though model one implicitly has different information. But yeah, this is pretty consistent across the board. Like if you look at persona QA shuffled, model just doesn't do well, like when you verbalize some of these outputs, right? Yeah, I think that's like the big part, which was like slightly surprising, which is like basically the verbalizer will keep like its implicit world knowledge on the basis of even if you like train the model. So it's really not taking that much information from the activation. Okay, I'm gonna skip this because there wasn't also like there was extra stuff where I talked about robustness and sensitivity of like the interpretation prompt. This might be similar to what you're asking, like did you try with different prompts, which I did. So I asked two questions, which is if I ask what is the effects of using semantically similar prompts. The reason why this is important is because prior work assumes only one set of prompts. With patch scopes, they're just like, oh, just try this prompt, but then they're just like they don't give like a reason, or they don't talk about like what happened if you changed the prompt. Okay, so to read this, basically this might be bit tiny, hopefully not, but I basically have the original prompt and then I show four different semantically similar prompts that I wrote. And cherry pick, I mean, maybe it's going to be hard to explain that, but I just wrote whatever sounded the same, or I got Claude to write it for me. And then if you see that there is, I think for this one, this is 0.35 to 0.14. So even if you pick like a pretty similar, semantically similar prompt, you will get pretty large drops in performance for some. And it's like pretty inconsistent. Like I think star constellation, which is asking about the constellation based on the input, you can. With the non-original prompt, you can get a very high performance if you just switch it, but there's not really a reason as to like why some prompts work better than others. I mean, this is just like prompting in general with like robustness. There was also another one that I did, which is I don't know how interesting this is, but basically it's kind of similar to the chain of thought where you basically ask like, oh, like I think the answer is blah or something. I have two different ones where I basically have like a So the two prompts is this one is me saying I think that the answer is this, and these answers are always wrong answers, by the way, so they're not ever the same as a single in one sample. And I also have one that says the answer is this, right? And so the interesting part is, sorry, the answer must be this. So the interesting part about this is if you say must, the model performance drops tremendously. So that amount of prediction is like a significant amount of the prediction is from predictive power is from the verbalizer, which means it's not really faithful to interpreting activations. But yeah, so I thought that was like pretty interesting. And then conclusion. Okay, I guess my conclusion from this is, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the tool, but maybe there is some use case for this. But I think the main issue is like this might not be as easy to compare or control because there's a lot of issues with conflicting world knowledge if for model one and model two. And honestly, I think even just using a basic probe might be better for like finishing running one experiment with a probe. But I think the probe can still extract information that a verbalizer wouldn't be able to under circumstances where the probe, where the verbalizer like does not have knowledge and neither does the probe. Like we basically ran some preliminary experiment with a probe where we were getting higher than random performance on the probe, but the verbalizer was getting zero when we were trying to predict the fantasy set. So I think that makes it more appealing to use a probe. But I also think, yeah, in some situations it's not like good to use verbalization where you can just interpret input text because it's a little questionable about what you would care to ask for. But yeah, I think that's basically it. But
Thank you, Melissa.
yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's great. I love the overall framing of the question
Okay,
when
cool.
you're measuring something with a complicated instrument.
Yeah.
Are you measuring your subject or are you measuring your instrument? Right?
Yeah. I think I mainly like the I think what I liked is everyone in interpretability wants to do this certain thing, which is to understand like how models work, but sometimes you might be measuring the wrong thing, which is like kind of what I've taken from this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
It's very cool.
cool. Okay.
Any last minute questions for Minnesota before she has to vanish?
Yeah, to disappear.
I thought the fantasy thing was not that trivial.
Oh,
I
really?
think it's kind of interesting. That like the verbalizer model doesn't know how to say raise roost or
I mean,
whatever.
because those
So
tokens are real. They're real tokens,
yeah,
so.
exactly. So it's like it doesn't know. Maybe it's because it sort of relates to my stuff of like it doesn't know how to actually say that because it's never seen that as a word.
It's not a deal now. Just because some sort of like preconceived notion of what a food name should be, and it does not really map it to the name of the food.
Yeah, so I think, oh,
Talking
sorry,
about
I kind of
country,
say
it has never
something.
seen Lumina as country.
Okay.
Yeah, Alberto, what did you say?
Yeah, I was just saying that actually, we first did the fantasy experiments before doing the shuffled one, and we also came to wonder whether the issue was that the verbalizer wasn't really able to produce those tokens because it had never seen them. But then when we did the shuffle experiment, it also didn't work very well. So I think it's probably a mixture of both things, both the tokens, like not the tokens, but the words being new, and also the and also information being not available to the world model of the verbalizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, really cool setup.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Yeah, when I talked to Byron about it, I was like, honestly, I don't know. It sounds kind of trivial, but I don't know. I think it'll. I do see like the what is it like the benefit or like just explicitly like saying these things, even though they're like kind of like obvious or something. I don't. I guess it's not always obvious to everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Millicent.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Okay, great. Okay.